long
Watershed Coordinator. I started at this job in about October, so I've been in this job for about four months now. So I will be leading this presentation, but keep in mind that if you guys have questions, there's probably someone in the audience better qualified to answer than me. We have a lot of our technical advisory committee here tonight to help, so lots of resources to answer your questions. So if any of you are not familiar with the Palmetier River Association, this is the first you've heard of it, we are a watershed-based, grant-funded, non-taxing entity. It's a partnership amongst the six counties that make up the Palmetier watershed. So starting in the south with Big Stone, Swift, Stevens County, up into Douglas, Grant, and West Otterdale County. So the partnership is then between the county government, and the Soil and Water Conservation District in each of those counties. Yes?
I have a question of why it was held tonight with the township elections going on.
Because I didn't know there was township elections.
Can we continue this meeting?
Please.
I called Minnesota Association of Townships attorney, and there's a statute that says yes, we can.
Because we're not county government.
Yeah, the Palmateer Association that's holding the meeting is not a public agency with taxing authority. So therefore, they're, you know, like a school district or a county or a formal watershed district. The Palmateer is a watershed organization, so therefore we're allowed to hold the meeting at the same time.
But you do pay state and federal funding, right?
Through the grant process, yeah, we apply for and have applied for state and federal grants. But we do not have, you know, taxing authority. We're made up of a joint powers agreement, you know, between counties and soil and water.
But, you know, it's just, it's kind of sad because it didn't make certain individuals that would like to come. And they're unable to pursue the election judges or have meetings. That's the only concern.
Townships were notified several weeks ago.
Township meetings are everywhere.
But if you notify them, why didn't you just change the date?
No one brought up until yesterday. No one informed me until yesterday. So, without having to entirely reschedule on one day's notice.
Yeah, we advertised in the newspapers about the meeting, you know, several weeks ago. We invited, you know, all the townships within the watershed, and would have been nice if, you know, we would have heard about it, you know, back then, and we obviously would have rescheduled, but since we had already scheduled it this morning when we found out, we reviewed that state statute and found out we were still legal, you know, we decided to move forward because it was already advertised. But if any of you know of anyone who, you know, would like more information that, you know, couldn't be here tonight, you can have a sign-up sheet, and Michaela would be more than happy to take your name, and we can get back to, you know, answer any questions anybody would have. So.
I think we'd even be willing to come out to the town boards and meet with them as a group. I know I wouldn't grant on it. That was a concern.
Now, the last thing we wanted to do was exclude, you know, townships. I mean, we want townships here to hear about what we're doing and what we have available for landowners in each individual township. So that would have been the last thing we wanted to do, was exclude the township.
So, like Brad said, we're governed by a joint powers board. That joint powers board is made up of an SWPD supervisor from each of those SWPDs, as well as a county commissioner from each of the six counties. We're also guided by a technical advisory committee, which is made up of a county employee and an SWPD employee from each of those counties and districts. Just a little bit of background information on the watershed. The Palmateer River watershed covers 875 square miles. Within that, there's 751 miles of stream or river. Palmateer River itself is 105 miles long. Within the watershed, we've got about 69% cropland, 9% water cover. There are 9 cities contained within the Palmateer watershed. And the total population within the watershed is about 15,200 according to the 2010 census. And within each county, the percent of the watershed, in Stevens we have the most with 39% of the watershed. Otter Tail is next with 23%. 18% of the watershed is in Grant County, 13% in Swift County, 4% in Douglas, and 3% in Big Stone County. So Palmateer helps cost share a lot of projects within the watershed. Some of those include rain gardens, water and sediment control basins. You can see one there holding water in the bottom picture and dry in the top. We help with stream bank restoration. We help with the Drywood Creek Dam removal in Swift County and stream restoration following that. We also spend a fair amount of cost share money on wetland restoration, filter strips, cattle exclusions, and more than that. So the reason we're here discussing tonight is one watershed, one plan. It's a movement through Bowser, an idea to develop a prioritized, targeted, and measurable local implementation plans aligned with state strategies on major watershed boundaries. And what that means, basically, is instead of having your county water plan, where, you know, in just in the Palmateer watershed, we have six counties, which would be, you know, fighting for funds or maybe having different ideas of how to manage the watershed. Under one watershed, one plan, the money is being allocated to a watershed, on a watershed basis rather than county basis. So these will be locally, they've been locally planned. So they're going to be locally adapted. Practices within them will be implemented locally.
What are you talking about specifically there?
Those are like if there was a pasture butting up to some water, and there was worry about runoff or erosion or pollution there, putting up a fence.
So what you're saying is that any farmer who has land or rivers in his property won't be able to graze his cattle close to that anymore?
That's not the rule. It's an option. It's an option for projects.
What are you suggesting as an alternative?
Have you got something to throw in here?
We've done a number of them in Grant County. Basically, it's a voluntary deal. The landowner wants to, can come in and car share on the fence and screw the cattle out of the stream or the water pump. It was strictly voluntary. You know, in some cases we provided water, an alternate source of water. One, we did some fencing, set him up for rotational grazing, and provided a well instead of the stream.
That would have been Beaver Johnson.
Was
Beaver Johnson was one example.
Okay. And just in, you know, in both cases, in one case or another, it's a significant stream bank erosion based on the cattle going up and down the bank. And the landowner recognized that was a great deal, and we could improve his grazing operation by adding some fence and some interior fences to it. And a better source of water.
So do you have an idea of what that costs?
Oh, off the top of my head, I think we would probably cost share on that somewhere around $10,000. We got a cost share on that.
Okay. All right.
Speak up. How big of an area? Talking 10 feet or 1,000 feet or what?
What's the question?
How big of an area was it?
In those cases, we didn't really, it kind of depends on the situation and how to square up the remaining pasture. So in some cases, we were, from meat and tail all the way. In other cases, we were closer. In other cases, we were smarter. In all those situations are different. It's, trying to protect that stream bank erosion. And based on what the farmer's needs are,
This isn't a regulatory thing. It's a voluntary thing. We're working with the landowners to solve the problems they have. It's based on, and these are the people that come to us in the communication.
Okay, but that's what they refer to as gas management practices in your...
That's one of them, yeah.
Okay. Right. I think, you know, all the practices on the slide prior to this, Michelle, are all voluntary. So, you know, I know several, I've worked with several landowners in the, you know, in the room here installing these practices, so... They came to our office seeking assistance, you know, with an erosion problem, and this watershed effort is not a mandatory, a new law, anything like that. The taxing district, kind of just the opposite, you know, we want you as citizens and township officials to understand that we have this cost share of financial assistance out there to address some of these water quality problems.
Okay, good question. Well, the Comprehensive Watershed Management Plan is the document that we've come up with outlining all our plans for the grant money that we could get under One Watershed, One Plan. And this next couple of slides just gives you some insight into what the roles of the people involved will be. Our Joint Powers Board has been very instrumental in approving all work plans, establishing committees, approving the plan's progress, and making sure everything is on track. Our technical advisory committee has been providing a lot of the scientific expertise and data, what they know from seeing practices done on the ground, from what they see being done within their counties and districts. GLAB has assisted a lot with recommendations and development of plans, and they provide recommendations then to the Joint Powers Board. Pontotoc River Association staff has been preparing work plans, preparing fiscal reports, budgets, any of the reports for the grantors, completing the assessment of plan progress, and just general administrative and fiscal tasks. And then the county and SWCD boards are going to be approving the plan once it's finished for submittal to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and then they'll be instrumental in adopting and implementing the plan locally. This is just a breakdown of some of the priority regions here in the north part of the watershed. There's priority stuff in the Northern Lakes area, so up in North and South Turtle. Then in the Christina and Pelican Lakes area, some priority issues we want to focus on there. Then getting into the south part of that map there, the Pontotoc River Lakes Chain area. Again, some of the priority issues we want to focus on are listed there. And of course, there's in the top right there, are some issues that we want to focus on watershed-wide. So not just in the northern area or in these priority areas. Same deal for the south part of the watershed. Again, watershed-wide issues we want to look at. Then in the Pontotoc River Lakes Chain area, the Drywood Creek area has some priority stuff to focus on, and in the Pontotoc River Corridor. Now I will let Otter Tail come up and talk about the Northern Lakes area.
Hello, my name is Ben Underhill. I work with the SWCDs out of Otter Tail as the water planner. I work with both the East and the West Otter Tail. The West Otter Tail SWCDs has all of the area in the Northern Lakes area is in West Otter Tail. And this came out of the priority area in this plan because of a lot of the lakes in the area. There are 139 lakes in Otter Tail, just in the Palm de Terre alone. And so it was really kind of this issue of how do we narrow down 139 lakes to really those ones that we're going to focus on first. And basically we looked at what the issues were. And the big issue with the lakes in this region is nutrients, phosphorus kind of being the main issue. And so we looked at which lakes have really high quality and which lakes have the poor quality. And we kind of filtered down to just a couple that were really important. North Turtle Lake is impaired for phosphorus, so that's one that came out as really important for being poor quality. And then we've got some really good high-quality lakes that Stocker Lake, for example, is in a declining trend right now. So if we don't do something in the future, we may have, below those water quality standards. So those are kind of the big reasons that we looked at the Northern Lakes area as an important part of this watershed. And of course, all this water is at the top of the watershed, and so it drains down to the rest of the watershed and has an impact on everything south of us here. So overall, it was just really a big, important area that everyone agreed we should, focus part of our effort on. And along with that goes the fact that most of this is in Otter Tail County, but we're working with neighboring counties, we're working with neighboring SWCDs to make sure we get our priorities the same. A couple of the other priority areas cross several county boundaries, and that's where that coordination is really important. And there's no exception here. We want to make sure that we're doing the right practices in the right spots, and we're doing those practices that are highest priority first. Does anybody have any questions about this priority area and why we picked it and what kind of actions we might be doing? Anything along those lines? Yeah.
Does Eagle, Middle, and Perry fall in that area?
I think
Eagle's in the next.
Yep, yeah. Eagle's in the next one.
What kind of actions are you going to require?
We won't be requiring anything. This whole plan is all about voluntary action, working with landowners to do what they can and what the best option is. Because even if we tried to make something that we would have everyone do, it doesn't always is the best fit for everybody's property. So we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing on each person's property, and that they want to they want to do it too. We're not going to be forcing anybody to do anything. Yeah.
You have phosphorus up there. Does copper sulfate have anything? Is copper sulfate, are there any issues with that in any of the water?
Not that I'm aware of.
That you're aware of. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious because I see copper sulfate that Fleet Farm says do not put in the water, but yet the lake associations through permitting through the DNR allow lakeshore people to put it in the water. And I'm just curious what effects that might have.
I guess I am not aware of any of that specifically. Okay. And I'm not even sure what copper sulfate would have an effect on the water. It's probably detrimental to a lot of plant and animal life in the water. And
I was just curious, but in the DNR, yeah, it's okay.
I can't speak to those exact details. I don't know. Sorry. Yeah.
Who's in charge of the dams along the Palm Beach there? The DNR?
So the DNR manages those dams, most of the dams. I guess I don't know about every specific dam, but sometimes if they're on private property, they can be owned by the private landowner. It's not really something that we are addressing a whole lot of in this plan. Because a lot of it goes on that those dams are kind of out of the control of the soil and water conservation districts and the counties. So we're hoping that we can maybe have some influence with the state agencies or private landowners, whoever might be owning them. But really, we're working with people on a voluntary basis, so we're just trying to do the right practice.
Well, I'm just, because when they get plugged by beavers and so on and so forth, nobody wants to do anything with them, so that's what I was wondering. Mm-hmm. Then nobody claims them.
Yeah. All right, well, this is kind of an introduction to the Northern Lakes area, and I don't want to spend too much of your time. We've got a bunch of other priority areas. Andy, are you going to speak next about the...
Yep. All right. So, I'm Andy Rice. I'm the district technician at Douglas Southern Water Conservation District. I'm going to go over the Christina Pelican Lakes priority area that we came up with. This covers parts of Otter Tail, Douglas, and Grant County. So a little background on this area. It's approximately 55,000 acres, a little bit more than that, and about a quarter of it is in water. We have about 49 lakes or wetlands that are over 10 acres in size or more, so there's quite a bit of water out in that area. Along with that, you have hillier topography, you've got steeper slopes, you got some areas with some sandier soils. So with all of that, and with having some of these high-valued lakes, we chose as a group that this would be a good area for a priority area. Looking at the map here, we have Eagle Lake and Spitzer Lake to the north. Both of those are of high water quality value currently, but they are at a point where if they continue to get excess loads of nutrients, specifically phosphorus, that could change what's going on in those lakes. Farther to the south there, you have Christina, which is the bigger lake in pink. That one is impaired for phosphorus and impaired for recreational use. And that lake directly flows into Pelican Lake, which currently has good water quality and is a recreational lake. So the water quality in Christina can directly impact Pelican Lake. Just looking through the priority goals, poor quality lakes, Christina, like I said, with that one, we're trying to reduce the phosphorus runoff into Christina. Some of the implementation activities include holding some annual meetings to identify lake management strategies and get the public involved. Just making sure everybody's aware of what's going on. And like Bennett said, this is a voluntary effort. So none of this is mandatory, but we want to make sure people are aware of what's going on. Looking at doing some inspections of subsurface sewage treatment systems, updating septic systems, doing some shoreline inventories, completing some well and restoration shoreline restoration projects, and then the structural and non-structural BMPs. This would be it's pretty much the same stuff for the high quality lakes, which we're also trying to reduce the phosphorus into Eagle, Spitzer, and Pelican. Lakeshore owner education. This one, we want to make sure that lakeshore owners do know some of the regulations that are out there. You know, I think of looking at Eagle, Pelican, you have more homes going up out on these lakes, you have bigger homes going up on these lakes, you have more impervious surfaces going up around these lakes. That can directly impact the water quality on those lakes. So we just want to make sure that lakeshore owners know about this and know the impact that can have on those lakes. Looking at it, we're going to be sending out direct mailings to new lakeshore owners and to existing, and then again, holding annual meetings just for education and outreach. And then lastly, we got to protect and restore perennial cover in shallow basins. Like I said, this area has some steeper topography, I feel like a lot of the perennial cover that's out there right now is decent, and we don't want to necessarily lose that. And whether it's with working with people on their own or through programs, we just don't want to. We want to maintain what we have out there and see if we can improve on that to stabilize some of these soils to help with soil erosion. And then with the wetland restoration, same thing. Maintaining those wetland restorations, making sure they're functioning properly, and adding more wetlands out there if possible. With those wetlands, they are helping with water quality, but they're also helping minimize flooding downstream and peak flows downstream, which has been also said we're at the top of the watershed, even with this area. Stuff that we're doing up here can impact everything farther down in the watershed. I don't know if anybody has any questions for me. If not, I'll be around for the duration. All right, I'll pass it on to Matt County. Thanks.
I'm Joe Montani. I'm the district manager at the Grant Soil and Water. And Greg Lillimone, Grant County Office of Land Management. Grant County takes two of us to do this. We're a little handicapped, maybe. Priority area that we're going to be mainly working with in Grant County stretches from basically up on the county line all the way down into Stevens County, which Matt can talk about a little bit more. But I want to talk first about the drinking water protection, and we'll. You know, private wells, we'll talk about a little later on here. This is specific to what's called drinking water supply management area for the city of Barrett. It has a high vulnerability, moderate to high vulnerability. So we're going to be looking at, you know, part of this change during the planning process. That area got smaller based on Department of Health, some work they were doing. But essentially what we're going to try to do is work with the city of Barrett, because some of the land in their drinking water supply area is outside of the city limits on some agricultural land and other lands. So we're going to try to help them work with those landowners to do some practices to protect their water supply for the city. It's probably mostly going to be about education, and some of that is going to be within the city itself. So we're going to work with the city there. The other issue, once we get on the main stem of the river, we have some poor quality lakes. Pondy Terre, Barrett, Perkins, heavy phosphorus loads. So as you get going down the river, the phosphorus levels keep bumping up. So we need to work in those areas to do some land management practices. And Greg, you want to talk a little bit about maybe some of the shoreline stuff we're talking about?
Okay. So I'll try to, a couple things popped up. We talked about copper sulfate, right? There was how it was called, right? Okay, so one of the things we're talking about is trying to meet with lakeshore owners who, you know, you hear the stories about the weed rollers and all that, and how we're trying to educate lakeshore owners that those things probably aren't always in their own best interest, because a lot of times the weeds that they're trying to get rid of are the things that absorb nutrients and also are a good place to hide little fish, trappings, sunfish, northern right? So that's one of the components of what we're going to try to do is try to engage the landowners along the shoreline to not do that kind of stuff, right? And my job involves mostly regulatory stuff. I'm the planning zoning guy, right? The guy that has to go out and issue the permits and do all that stuff. And one of the things that always strikes me as kind of funny, and I think most of you, at least up in this end of the watershed, will recognize and know a lot about Pelican Lake, right? It's in Grant County right by Ashby's. And for 26 years now, I've been going to that property association's annual meeting like we try to do on most of the lakes. And I've come to realize, and it didn't take very long, but on that lake, there is severe erosion. There's other landowners who have very shallow shorelines where their dock has to be 200 feet long, right? So even within one single lake, like Pelican Lake, we can have people who want the water high, We can have people who want the water low. There's some that don't want the water in Christina, to be clear, because it screws up their walleye fishing, because they want dirty water. And then the neighbor next door, who has grandkids, wants that water crystal clear, because he wants to go and take his kids' teeth. Right? So we have this pretty diverse attitude, and I can kind of sense in this room what we're talking about tonight is everybody's pretty passionate about water, and we've got some things going on Jolly Ann that I think some of you are interested in, right? But, you know, ultimately, what most of us on this technical group are trying to do is educate you guys on the importance of water quality, and it's not so much high water, low water, you know, it's just about water quality in general. So, back to the concept of having a regulatory hat. A lot of this stuff is voluntary, but there are some things that we are going to promote, you know, the septic systems, for example. We have rules on the books, and if you have a non-compliant septic system, it ain't voluntary to fix it. You just fix it, right? So, that's, you know, you'll reference in there, and you'll see that we update non-compliant septics. The other thing we're going to do then, too, that, and I don't think it'll, 90% of the things that we talk about up here are never going to be regulatory. We recognize nobody likes to get hit over the head with a stick. But there are some things that we have to, at some point, maybe regulate. So we are going to be going ahead and doing some pretty detailed shoreline inventories to determine where folks have problems and where they don't. You know, and maybe for the next 10 or 15 years, we'll work with them. But then eventually, maybe we might tell them they have to do something.
Are you saying that if they have to update their system, if they're on the lake, they have to go to a mound sewer system?
No. Nope, that's based on the soil thing. Yep. Mounds aren't mandatory, right? It just depends on your soil thing. They're getting to be more and more common, right? You know that. But what they're trying to do now is there's separation that they're trying to achieve between the water table and the bottom of your drain field. So that's why these mounds are starting to come up.
Would, and I'm not here to, but would it not be beneficial to put in holding tanks around every lake and have those people pump? I mean, not that they want that expense either, but if you're totally looking at trying to clean up lakes, look at the chemicals that go in a septic system today versus 40 years ago.
Right, but if a septic system is properly designed and installed, they're very efficient at removing everything. That's why you have a mound, because now you have air in the soil that can treat all those things that you're talking about. So what's going on now is they're going around and reevaluating where those systems aren't functioning properly. And sometimes the only solution is a holding tank.
You know, I'm just...
Yep. There are lots that only have holding tanks. Now, is that the solution for everything?
I don't. No, I'm just...
Yep. Anybody else? Yeah, well, let me turn it back to Joe.
Yeah, the other part of this, you know, we're looking at those shoreline conditions on these lakes. You know, the other thing we're going to do from our end then is come in and offer some assistance in correcting erosion problems, both on ag land and shoreline. And there's all kinds of practices we can do, either water and sediment control basis, my work, shoreline restoration. I mean, I think it's as important to have buffers on shoreline property as it is on ag land property. And we'll work with landowners to, you know, voluntarily do this. So that's kind of the concept there. And then again, a lot of it is about education. I've been at this a long time, and most people are in favor of good water quality. Sometimes we don't know the right things to do to get it. And I think we all, as people, we all do things to affect water quality, either negatively or positively. And sometimes it's just a matter of knowing what the right way to do is. You know, people, the copper sulfate, do they know that's the wrong thing to do? Or did they read it back in the magazine someplace, this will kill your weed?
You know, does it hurt anything?
Do they know? Yeah. And that's part of the education process. And I think we're all still learning. You know, this is about cleaning up the water. And doing it on a voluntary basis. And Greg mentioned there's shoreline rules that have been around a long time. Septic rules have been around a long time.
But most of this is about voluntary stuff to clean up the water, both our drinking water and our surface water. Any questions for us?
If you want to do something along your lakeshore to try and improve it, you got to get a permit from land management?
Usually, yes.
So it depends for, how extensive, right? If you want to come in with a full swing backhoe and start changing things, yeah, you probably do.
Well, I mean, if you're going to can clean something up and make it right to benefit the lake, we're going to have to pay that $500 permit fee or whatever to try and fix it.
Well, there may be cost share assistance, that's right.
Yeah.
There's an identified problem. There's the opportunity with this money that we'll be getting to correct those things that you're talking about. Yep. So the money's available to help you.
So if you did have a problem and you went up to land management, they would come out and find you?
Dr. Kyle.
Well, I mean, you guys want stuff.
No, right. You and we just talked about putting a buffer in, right? And we talked about drinking water. And some of us know what's going on in Frog Lake, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is maybe something where these dollars might come in handy.
Yeah,
that's what, right?
I just don't want to have to buy permits.
Right.
We'll walk you through that. I mean,
yeah,
we've done projects, in shoreline where we've got to move some dirt, we've got to solve a problem. We work with the landowner, we work with Greg, we work through it. You know, we'll come up with a plan, take it to the planning commission, those kinds of things, work with you on the permit. There's cost share assistance available for those kinds of things. Figure it out. Or just tell Greg that you don't need a permit in case.
Well, you know what, guys? I think, too, maybe you can sense, and I'm kind of getting on a soapbox a little bit here, but one of the things, and now this group of people that are the county staff, the SWCDs in the county, traditionally we kind of run our own little silos, right? Now this whole concept now is creating more of a seamless deal for the soil and water guys and the planning and zoning people and county commissioners from different counties. We're all starting to work together and recognize the thing that you're just talking about is important. If you've got a problem on your lakeshore and you'd like to fix it, we don't want to come in and find you. We want to come in with some money and help you. That's the goal, right?
What about them on Spitzer Lake then when you're flooding?
That's a tough problem. That's a really tough problem. They don't have a natural outlet.
No.
It's not just Spitzer. I mean, you just go down. All you got to do is get off the hill and go down to the next watershed and look at what's going on around Lee's Place. That water table is just out of hand. Right? I mean, those are things we talk about in our plan. We're trying to come up with solutions. Right?
And I was reading your 100 pages on this. It was talking about, this health and assistance. And like if the government helps you put in an easement, it says something to the effect that if you as a landowner, if you put in and accept that help, that the state or federal government will continue these land use restrictions placed on the property, even if it changes owners. Is that correct?
An easement typically runs with the land, not the landowner. So if you place an easement on your property, yes, that's true. There are other options.
As far as other best management practices, like if you do some other types of changes on your property, would you accept that money? Would they, in fact, be able to continue on with previous next owners?
Depending on most, we have an easement, which is one thing, and then we have contracts, which are another thing. So, are you familiar with the Reinvest in Minnesota program?
Yeah.
That's an easement program. And that's placed on the land, and that goes with the land. CRP, are you familiar with that one?
Mm-hmm.
That's a contract. And those contracts usually run for 10 to 15 years. The cost share practices typically are a 10-year contract. We give you money to do a project. We're going to require that you maintain that project for 10 years. If you sell the land, you're required to tell the next owner if that's in place. That's how they typically do.
Okay.
And then there's going to be other things that we're doing. We probably haven't done as much of in the past, and that's some things like soil health practices with cover crops, no-till, those kinds of things with ag guys, those are going to be much shorter-term contracts. Because that's, you know, that's kind of an annual thing that they're doing, and we're trying to, you know, do some incentive programs there and get that, those practices adopted. So, yes, an easement is typically perpetual, typically goes with the land. Contracts are, you know, could range from 1 to 2 years on an incentive type payment for cover crops, 10 years on something like large extended control basin. Anything else for us? Yeah? Yeah.
Kendall. Two more guys. I'm Matt Solmsas from Stevens County. I'm the administrator at Soil and Water, and Bill Feindel is Environmental Services, or known as Land Management, I guess, in Dan County. We just had one little iron and fire up the northern part. That would be Perkins Lake. It's basically the only recreational type of body water that we have in Stevens County. We've done a lot of lakeshore stuff there, I guess, to get to your point of needing a permit on everything. Stop mowing your grass down the edge of the lawn, let it grow, plant some natives. That doesn't require a permit, at least in Stevens County, you know. We've done a lot of shoreline restoration stuff just to help keep a lot of those chemicals, you know, the phosphorus, the problems out in the lake. I can't really speak to the septic portion and build some inventories out there, what you guys are doing there.
Well, in Stevens County, as Matt said, that's probably the most used lake for recreation, and it has the most development. Of course, we're moving from the lake country down into the more agricultural part of the landscape. So things change. We have a little bit more runoff issues with the chemicals that potentially get to the lake. Some of those in septic systems, for the most part, from what I know, most of the systems are enclosed in the county, not to say that they're all meeting the groundwater separation, as Greg had mentioned earlier, as far as you need that two-foot separation between the bottom of the drain field and the seasonal high water table. But just with standing water, can, you know, it's the indication of soil was at one time the water table was up high and then it went down. So, as has been talked about earlier, on Perkins Lake, as well as the other lakes that Greg and Joe were talking about in Grant County, there's going to be some educational type of things for lake owners, as well as septic system inspections and upgrades. Try to utilize any low-interest loans programs for folks that need to have or wish to have that. Otherwise, that's pretty much all I have on Perkins Lake. It's not probably as well used or would like to be more well used for recreation, but in the upper part of the watershed, the lakes are a lot better water quality sheet than this one. This is recognized as a port policy in this priority area as well. The other thing that, moving on down to the watershed then, is the city of Morris does have a wellhead protection area. It's got a drinking water management supply area as well. Now, their wells are in non-confined sandy gravel deposits in that type of an aquifer. There's not a confining there, so they're more susceptible to any type of land use product that you are, something that you do on the land that's going to potentially cause pollution. The wells are all relatively shallow, from like 65 to 80 feet deep. The majority of that wellhead protection area is, I should say the majority, a lot of it is defined as high vulnerability, meaning it's susceptible against the groundwater contamination. And what we want to do is work with the city of Morris and any other property owners that are interested in best management practices. But for the most part, in Morris, most of the land in that high priority area is University of Minnesota, Morris land. And a lot of it is pasture already, so it's got perennial vegetation. We were just, this whole wellhead protection issue came up during our last meeting when we were addressing comments And as Joe indicated up in Grant and Barrett, the city of Barrett, that area reduced. And looking at our area as far as converting farmland to non-farmland, there's very little. So we're going to look at sealing abandoned wells that are out there that we don't know about, working with the city of Morris as far as providing more education for the city itself. Because that section area is vulnerable if the wrong land use still happens out on the landscape. And Morris is putting in water treatment plant there too.
I guess moving down, like Bill said, we're a completely different landscape than you guys are up north. With Morris, you know, I think we all recognize that water quality isn't just a rural issue. I mean, it's an urban issue as well. So we've been working with a lot of folks in the urban area, especially Morris. It's the largest metropolitan area, I would say, in the watershed, doing rain gardens, a lot of stormwater things, keeping, you know, their stormwater out of the storm sewer that gets down to the river. So we're cost-sharing on things like that in those areas. Much of the same stuff that they've done up north, you know, doing the structural and non-structural BMPs, the CRPs, putting things into grass, doing a lot of the in-stream habitat stuff. There's a lot of cattle as you move down. We have irrigation, you know, the livestock thing, the cattle exclusion. We started actually doing that when we first kind of came together as a group and started getting grant money. We cost-shared on that fencing and those watering systems, you know, to keep the cattle out, because there is definitely some in-stream habitat issues, stream stabilization, sidewater inlets, you know, and the buffers. Just everybody recognizes, you know, good water quality and the need for buffers where they're needed. I don't know if you have anything else in this one, Bill. And then we moved down a little further away from where most of you folks are, the Drywood Creek area. Priority here in Stevens, I can't really speak to Swift and Big Stone, but, you know, the poor quality lakes, there's really not much for lakes. There's a lot of drain basins out there. It's primarily farm ground. You know, doing some nutrient management plans. Same kind of BMPs, the livestock stuff, pasture management, rotational grazing. A lot of those same things. It's, you know, it's vastly different from what folks like Brad and Joe and those guys deal with up north with the quality lakes, or any lakes in general. I don't know if there's Andy here from Swift. Anybody from Swift?
So what's the big
time? Big time. Okay.
Yeah, I'm Joe Otto from Big Stone SWCB. Matt covered a lot of it. Not solving growth record, but it's really a combination of all the different practices that all the counties are doing. So we talked about reducing phosphorus. The pink lake there is Artichoke Lake. Kind of a unique lake in that part of the county. And like Matt was saying, distinctly different from all the lakes up here. Shallow, it's impaired for phosphorus and sediment, I believe. So we're looking at both some of the shoreline stuff as well as practices on the ag land, everything from the septic systems that we discussed to shorelines, and converting some of the cropland from the vulnerable cropland into habitat through CRP, through defense, something like that. Buffers as well, and in addition to that, some of the in-stream habitat you can see there, Artichoke Creek and the Drywood Creek, looking at not only improving water quality but creating some of that habitat within the stream. So, unless there were any questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
And then last, we have a couple of priorities that are watershed-wide. We didn't focus them on a specific priority area, and they include any of the areas that are outside of the priority areas, too. It's just an issue that we want to look at across the watershed. So drinking water protection, we already talked a lot about the cities and their drinking water supply management areas and their wellhead protection. But we also want to look at the private drinking water and protecting that. And that, of course,
covers the entire watershed. There's no particular priority for that. We want to make sure everybody has good drinking water. So that's why that is a priority, just because it's across the watershed and, you know, private drinking water. And really the big issue with those are the nitrates and arsenic, kind of the two big contaminants we look at. So really what we're doing is we're trying to either reduce the amount of nitrate or provide testing so that people know if they have high arsenic. Just provide some of that information to help people better understand how to care for their own well. Our next big priority is groundwater conservation. And this is looking more at water quantity than water quality. You know, there's some irrigation that happens in certain parts of the watershed, and just in general, we want to make sure that we have sustainable aquifers throughout the entire watershed. So we made this a watershed-wide priority, and a lot of the practices we're doing are really to conserve water use, things like irrigation management, identifying recharge areas so that we get that sustainability as we get more withdrawals. And then this County Geologic Atlas is a tool that counties and SWCDs can use to understand how water flows underground, what it's made of, how deep it is, what the kind of soils are like, so we can kind of know all that information and help us make better informed decisions about what conservation practices work best. And then another one is altered hydrology. Oh, did you have a question?
What do you do if you find nitrates in a well or arsenic? What do you recommend?
Yeah, so basically once the water is in there, or the nitrate or the arsenic is in there, it's takes a long time to remove it from the groundwater. So we basically just look for treatment systems. And a lot of times it's recommend reverse osmosis is pretty much one of the few things, you know, the most common thing, most easily available thing that's going to work for that. Not necessarily, depends on how expensive of a system you get and what, you know, a bunch of other factors, how high your nitrates are. But it will reduce it below state drinking water standards as long as it's maintained. So, good question. So then the last one is altered hydrology, which is looking at basically that there's been an increase of water flowing in the river since, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And a lot of that has to do with change in land use practices. A lot of that has to do with more precipitation. But regardless of what the reason is, we want to try and reduce or limit those impacts. So that includes not just reducing the amount of water that gets to the river by infiltrating it more or providing some other kind of way to hold it for a temporary amount of time. That way we can reduce also the peak flows. And make sure that we're not, you know, because another big issue that a lot of areas have is stream bank erosion, and a lot of that can be caused by high peak flows, just having a lot of water coming through all at once. So kind of working on all those different things together, there's a lot that goes into altered hydrology. So this is kind of a big topic, and there's a lot of actions that go with it, but we kind of distilled them down to just a couple. So that's why we're looking at that. And then, of course, all of these are voluntary, again, still. These are things that we want to work with people. Some of them might be easier than others. You know, people are always concerned about drinking water, so it's usually pretty easy to help people find the test and see what their water is. But some of these other practices can be difficult to implement and go through a long process to figure out what exactly the right practice is. We also have aquatic invasive species as another big watershed-wide goal. And the AIS, as it's commonly referred to, is something that can affect any lake, any stream. So we don't really want to limit it just to one or two priority areas. And this is something already that the counties have a lot of practice doing. They have a lot of programs in place and a lot of funding to work on this. So we'll be working with those counties heavily to make sure that we are collaborating better. We're all doing the same thing, and that's because that's something that we haven't done before, is having the counties work together across boundaries. And just making sure that we continue to support them and what they need. And then lastly, we've got this big category of watershed outreach. And this is that kind of catch-all for all of the education, all of the information that we're going to provide. And this covers, you know, pretty much every topic we've talked about tonight, whether it's some of the other ones like altered hydrology and groundwater, or whether it's specific to lakes, or whether it's specific to irrigation, or anything like that. We're going to be really working with landowners through lots of different ways, trying to do some sort of outreach to help people figure out what the best practice is on their land. Again, all voluntary, and so we really just want to work with people to do the right thing, right? I mean, that's what it boils down to. Any questions about that? I didn't cover a lot of the education and outreach part because it's still such a broad category, but yeah.
I have a question. Where they changed how the water goes into the Minnesota River, Palm Beach Air there, and they took out the dam and Grand Rapids and stuff, is that all working out there?
I think so. Have you heard anything?
I haven't heard very much at all about that.
Yeah. It sounds like...
I know they converted it back to the way it used to be naturally.
Yeah, from what I understand, it's been going good. Anybody else hear anything?
I think they've made a couple different tweaks, like a simple junior and a couple rocks around just to maintain their design. But yeah, they tore up down, implemented the rock ripple.
Yeah.
So it's a couple of just pretty aggressive arches that head upstream, and yeah, that's been working pretty well.
All right. Well, thank you. Turn back over to you, Michaela.
That's my last slide. If anybody's got questions, it doesn't have to be related to what was on the slide, but if you have any questions in general about the plan.
Or if anybody has any comments with this time, probably be good to get comments about the plan that we should try to address. That's what we need to do.
Is this plan finalized, or is this a plan that's still going under review?
So it's still under review.
Is that what the meeting was for tonight? To let people know it's under review?
Yeah. So it's a draft plan.
Okay. Nobody said that. Make it sound like it's all in place.
We have one final step after the public hearings. You know, we're going to collect comments from anybody who was at these meetings or, you know, has anything to say about it, and then we'll be addressing the comments and amending the plan if needed, as needed. And then, you know, if there's substantial differences, we'll be redoing some sections there.
So is this going to be similar to the Salt River watershed and the pages of things that have been in the Echo Press and the levees and the adjustments and all of that?
That is a watershed district, and that's with Texan authority. This is just a watershed plan. It's just setting up our, like every county has had a water plan, we're just doing it watershed-wide from here on out. That's what Biology of the Border, Water, and Soil Resources wants to do. Just because all of the water in this area all flows to the same point instead of having political boundaries for these different watersheds, or different plans, I should say. But, yeah, the Sauk River Watershed District, that is completely separate, yes. And there has been a lot of comments in the Echo, and there's been quite a few public meetings to address concerns in that area, yes.
Okay, 6.4.1 talks about funding. So what are these tax levies, fees that are listed? Or not listed. It says for 10 years it's going to cost $64 million. That's an awful lot of money, and it says part of it comes from state, part from the federal government, but it also lists the county too, and I don't know how much it's costing the county. And what are we getting for it?
Do I have the right part of this you're talking about?
6.4.1.
Mm-hmm.
think one of the important things about this plan is that we're not changing the funding at all. We're not making a watershed district with taxing authority or anything like this. This local funding is already funding that's there. We're just collaborating together, working together to point it in the direction that it's going to be most useful. So none of this is new money. We're not going to be putting any levies out. We're not going to be doing anything like that. We're really just using the money we already have from the sources that we already get and using it more effectively, more efficiently, and more targeted. Does that make sense? All of it, local, state, and federal.
Well, hopefully it'll be some new state now.
Yeah.
Nothing's changing with this. I mean, we've been a Pometeer River Association for the last 20-some years. Nothing is changing other than instead of everybody having their own water plan, we're going to go by one plan. So anything that we've been doing in the past, we're going to continue doing, and hopefully we'll get more funding from the state, from grants, but we're going to function exactly as we have with one water plan that we're all working on instead of grants and Stevens and Swifts and Otter Tails. So that's it. That's the only change.
Okay.
There's no funding change. We're not going to tax anybody. It's going to go exactly how it's been going the whole time with one plan instead of
Stevens. But then you can take it out of this here statute you got printed that lists local tax levies, fees and services. I mean, eventually, if all of a sudden you decide you don't have enough money.
So the county has taxing authorities.
The counties all do.
Yeah, so that's why it's in there, because that money they'll use on things like septic systems and shoreline.
The trouble is, we're all members, and we're the citizens of the county, and they're going to turn around and say, what? The commissioners are going to pay for it.
I mean, there's no plans at this time to change any of that.
I know, but that's what scares me, because you don't know 5 years down the road. A different group comes in and runs your organization, and they'll go ballistic on it for crap.
That we don't have any authority to change those county taxes. This group is not able to do that. We've only got one representative of each county, and they have to be able to go back to their entire county board and say that this is a good idea to change this. And anyone in the group right now, I don't think anybody thinks that that's a good idea.
No, I know, but the group will change. I'm not saying you guys have done it, but I worry what's coming down the road later is a different group.
You had a question?
Just saying, as progressive as this state is becoming, and listening to entities and governmental and global things that are coming down the pipe with Agenda 21 and sustainability and all of the 17 SDGs, I can't help but think that things that are being referred to as being voluntary now are going to turn out to backfire. And people are going to be required, individuals, whatever, to pay for things that are going to be very expensive. It's just my observation, and I see things changing along those lines.
Okay.
So when you say voluntary, I think, how long?
Okay, so that's a very good comment. Thank you. So when we work through this plan as it's written right now, we keep saying voluntary, right? And this group, this organization, as this plan is written, we want to continue keeping that voluntary, this organization. If something comes from above of us or the state, put some sort of regulation out, there's nothing we can do about that. That's something that we would be working with the state agencies, with the politicians, in order to make sure that if we're going to be doing regulation, we're doing it for the right reason. And frankly, I don't think we want regulation in anything else that we've done. So we would be fighting probably against that fight most of the time as this local group. But again, if something comes from, the state or the federal government or something, we don't have all that much control over that. So I hear your concern, and we're doing the best we can in this plan to showcase everything being as much voluntary as possible. And if something changes that's out of our control, then we'll have to work with that. But as a local group, voluntary is where we want to stay.
I would say this, if we're successful in cleaning up some of these lakes through voluntary methods, that will put an end to the regulatory stuff. But if we're not successful, as citizens, I live on Merritt Lake, I'm part of the problem as well. We don't make regressions. We cannot leave future generations with poor water quality. So our best avenue here is to get this done voluntarily so we don't have to deal with regulators. I always use the analogy, I'm way more responsive when my wife asks me to do something than when she tells me to do something. So I want to avoid that at all costs. Usually she has to ask me about 5 times.
Thank you, Joe.
Are you pursuing buffers down on the lake? Not as voluntary?
So are you
not included?
You're talking about the buffer law, right?
Buffer law.
Yeah, we will be enforcing the buffer law as it's written. And
No, I'm asking if you're going to pursue it on the lake, not at all.
It is required for the lakes, yep, but it requires perennial vegetation, and lawns are considered perennial vegetation. That's a vegetation that's there year-round. So technically they meet that requirement. We're trying to help landowners do the next step above and beyond, do these shoreline restorations, do some no mowing down at the end of their property, those sorts of things. You had a question?
Yeah, the one source of funding that should be looked at and attacked quite frequently is the legacy funding, legacy amendment funding. There's approximately $110 million a year available.
Yep.
On this, and but keep your oar in the water on this one. And,
yeah.
And
so
keep going after it.
Actually, a lot of the state funding that we do get, they are through different various avenues of this legacy funding.
Another question.
Yep.
In 10 years, we're looking at making it perpetual. But we got 10 years yet. Question for you, Joel. You mentioned the seamlessness of the nature of the watershed districts. Well, we are presently in a discussion in our area with Gishes. I know, John, that makes you rise a little bit, but I'd like to see the seamlessness of this incorporated into the ditches, because they are an integral part of the watershed, and we've got some major problems on our portion of the Pond de Terre. That 17% flows from Eagle Middle, Doherty, and down to Jolly Ann. And we want to bring it a little bit more to light, I think that seamlessness is going to be pretty important for the watershed district to work with the ditch authority, also in the drainage authority.
Do you want to say something?
I think the first thing is just that we're not a watershed district. We're just a collaboration. And so, yes, we're going to be working together fairly seamlessly, but we're not a watershed district in the same way that the Saco River watershed district.
You don't have any plans for a $2 million, or a $2 million building. Good.
I don't, we don't really deal with a lot of the legal ditch things. Simply because counties already have authority on those. Yes, they're part of the water thing, and I'm not familiar with the stuff in Otter Tail, but in Grant County we have very few legal ditches in this part of the Grant County. Most of our legal ditches are out in another watershed plan we're working on.
Well, so many of these ditches are incorporated where they're part of a creek like the Pelican Creek, where the ditch is part of it, the Pelican Creek is part of it, and that flowage is all intertwined. And it all relates to the water quality.
And I certainly would be working in those areas where we can, and I think it's going to be, there'll probably be some opportunities to work with the Legal Ditch Authority to do projects and things.
If you want to bring up 5.2.1, right there.
Yeah. And like Joe said, a lot of it is already covered by counties having that authority. And then the statute, the 103 statute, also describes a lot of requirements and things that have ditch laws covers. So I think that's probably one of the big reasons that it wasn't louder in the plan, is because there's already this framework for it, and we're going to be working within that framework, not trying to do anything outside of it.
It's pretty contentious.
It is, yeah, very contentious.
I just got a question, pretty much a yes or no question. For, you know, Ricky Noonan, law firm they represent or whatever, a lot of you guys with the letter for counties and watershed districts. And I was just wondering how many of you guys and entities are affiliated with Ricky Noonan law firm? Yeah, just wondering. Thank you.
Anything else at this time? If not, if you got a handout, there's some contact information for some of the SWCDs. There's a link to the website where you can find the plan if you want to look at it some more. If anybody wants to make a written comment that you know that you don't feel got addressed tonight, please do that and submit it to me by the end of this week. Otherwise, everybody, please take some food.
When is this going to be?
When is it going to be what? Sorry, who was that?
When is it going to be submitted? This is the public hearing.
So once we address all the comments, our joint powers board needs to meet next on.
Yeah.